If terms like Yulebookers and Nisser immediately make you think of Christmas, I'm guessing you have a little Norwegian in your background. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Kathleen Ernst, a writer, educator, and social historian, my guest to begin the program today. She has a great new book out. It's called Heritage of Darkness, and it's set at the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah, Iowa, and it's set right before the holidays. As always, she weaves a great murder mystery that is chock full of well-researched historical and cultural details. And Chloe Ellefson is Ellefson, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, Chloe Ellefson. This is, how many is this now? Third, is it?
Fourth.
Fourth?
Yes, we're up to the fourth already.
And I've read every one. I should have remembered. And this is a great, great fun read. And your books are really, in a way, they're kind of love letters to history.
They really are. I'm fascinated by history myself, and I've made history the core of my career. And writing the Chloe Ellefson Historic Sites Mystery Series lets me share places that I love and themes that I find compelling with readers.
Well, this book, Heritage of Darkness, takes Chloe, her mom, and her boyfriend,
yes.
Relke. Is it Relke?
Relke,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Relke. To the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah, Iowa. And that's a real place.
It is a real place. Wonderful museum in Northeast Iowa. Well, it's the largest single collection of ethnic artifacts anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the collection started many years ago, over a century ago. And the Norwegian government also felt that Norwegian Americans should have a place in America where they could see important aspects of their own history and tradition. So they also donated some wonderful pieces from Norwegian collections and museums. So there is a fabulous traditional museum with exhibits and artifacts and an amazing collection. And there's also an outdoor division with structures that have been saved and brought there to the campus.
I haven't been there, but it sounds like a fascinating
place. It is a fascinating place, and not too far from Western Wisconsin. A nice day trip.
And Chloe's mom is a prize-winning rose mauler.
That's right.
And Chloe signs up for a workshop herself. And
yes.
Rose mauling is, I was born in Stoughton.
Ah, okay.
So I have lots of ties with the community of Stoughton, and so I'm very accustomed to rose mauling, but maybe not everybody is. So you want to talk about it?
Yes, rose mauling, sometimes known as rose painting, is a form of traditional painting in Norway. It's a folk art. Mm-hmm. And at one time it was done professionally, primarily by men who traveled in Norway and helped decorate some of the cabins with this beautiful, vibrant, colorful painting. And different regional styles emerged. And when the immigrants came here to the States in Wisconsin, it almost died out. People were just too busy getting mm-hmm. their feet on the ground, becoming American, Norwegian Americans, and not just Norwegians. And then there was a revival that began in your hometown in mm-hmm. Stoughton. And today, rose mauling is a thriving art. And at Vesterheim, they bring in prize-winning, internationally known teachers to teach students every year.
Well, it's and of course Chloe's mom is a prize winner in the area. Relke, meanwhile, is signing up for a Norwegian carving class.
Yes.
What's special about the Norwegian tradition of carving?
Well, Norwegians have had a very, very strong tradition of carving that's been consistent, as I understand it. Unlike rose mauling, it never really came close to dying out. A lot of men learn to do decorative work as well as, of course, practical work with wood in Norway. And they adapted when they came to Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota to the trees that were available here. Mm. And again, those long winter nights, I think they just chose to sit and carve and whittle. And several just spectacular traditions have stayed strong.
Something that I've always... I haven't really gotten into it, but I own a lot of carvings.
Ooh.
and so I've often thought I would, at some point, if I ever retire, I might get
have a little time on your hands
to do a little of that carving. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in, by the way. Have you visited that museum, that Vesterheim Museum, what really stuck with you. Are you a Norwegian-American, or what Christmas traditions have been handed down to your family? Or what do you think about Kathleen's books? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And Barb in Oconomowoc is online, so let's go there. Barb, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, hi, Kathy. This is Barb.
Hi, Barb.
And I cannot top Larry's compliments on your book. What I need to say right now is that I'm savoring your book. I've had it long enough, but I'm only past midway through, and I'm just like Rolke. You know, we got all these people that are all intertwined, and I'm, you know, waiting to figure out who did it, but I'm not in a rush to get through it.
What a kind comment. Thank you, Barb. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Barb, if you're like me, it'll be right to the end before you it's finally revealed, and that's when you figure it out.
Yeah.
Which
that's
is a good thing.
I love when she does that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
It's on my to-do list to get to Westerheim now. Definitely.
I'm sure you would enjoy it.
Yeah. Thanks, Barb. Appreciate your call. You can join in too at 1-800-642-1234. And I'm sure you hear a lot from your readers.
I do. I absolutely love hearing from readers, and nothing makes me happier than hearing from someone who says, oh, my book group read one of your books, and then we had a field trip to one of the historic sites that's featured in one of the books, or after reading your book, we decided we needed to take the kids. I love being a little promoter that way of very special historic sites.
And you do a little of that yourself. I mean, you have some events associated with with the books.
I do. Yeah. I love collaborating with the historic sites and museums. The first two books in the series are set at Old World, Wisconsin, where I used to work, and we've done some tours out there, and they're always very gracious and invite me to come back. And this year I'll be doing some special programming at Westerheim a little bit later on in the fall. A special behind-the-scenes Chloe Ellefson tour, as a matter of fact, in early December. And readers can find all the details about that on my website, which is KathleenErnst.com.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a link to that on my Facebook page. So if you're at my Facebook page right now, the Larry Mueller Show, you can just click on that and go right straight to Kathleen's site, where you will find out a lot of great information. By the way, you're also reading tonight too, aren't you?
Yes, we are having a launch party tonight at Mystery to Me, which is Madison's newest independent bookstore and just an absolutely marvelous gift to the community. So I invite everyone to come out. I'll be there on Monroe Street at Mystery to Me from 6 till about 7:30. And in addition to a short reading, I have some show and tell, some artifacts to share. We'll have lefse there for people to try. So all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, lefse. I haven't had any lefse for
a
long time.
It's a treat.
So that'll be fun. That's tonight. What time tonight?
It starts at 6, and I'll be there at least until 7:30.
So Mystery to Me Bookstore, and that's on Monroe?
Monroe Street. Monroe Street. 1863 Monroe Street in Madison.
Let's take a call from Richard in Pigeon Falls. Richard, hi. Thank you very much for calling.
Hello. Thank you for accepting my call. Hello. First of all, I wanted just to say that I have been to the museum many times because I graduated from Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, which is something I cherish. I guess it's my second home, Decorah, really.
Mm-hmm.
If it were in Wisconsin, I'd probably move there. But anyway, also, and I have not read any of these books, and I've written it down because I've been hearing about them, but I can't think of Norwegian Christmas from the past without thinking of Yule Book, which is a tradition that we kept at around Pigeon Falls. Is very Norwegian, by the way. When I was a child, everyone spoke Norwegian.
Mm.
And I remember every night almost between Christmas and New Year's, large groups of people coming to our house, all dressed up
as
in costumes, pounding on, you know, on dish pans and hollering and carrying on. And I was terribly, terribly afraid of them. And my sister concocted this story about the fact that there was a whole family of Eulabook that lived in our attic the year round.
Oh, my.
She even put names on them. And I thoroughly, I really believed in that for a long time. To this day, when I go in the attic, I think, well, I think the Eulabook are gone. But anyway, that was such a tradition among many other Norwegian traditions in our community when I was growing up.
Richard, thanks so much for
calling in.
And actually, the story unfolds with the Christmas season as a backdrop, as we were talking about, and the older Norwegian-American characters share some of that Norwegian Christmas lore, and the Eulabook, or the Eulabookers, are costume pranksters, just as Richard was saying.
That's right. And I've only read about the tradition. So, Richard, I'm so grateful for your story. It was a time in between Christmas and New Year's traditionally where people would dress up. And as I understand it, the intent was really to camouflage their identity totally. It was a time of year when people could do something that was just totally out of character. And sometimes in a small community, that might have been the only time that they could, a woman might dress as a man or vice versa. And interesting, based on the story that Richard just told, in my book, my main character, Chloe, was also introduced to Eulabooking as a child, and she was terrified. And so even though she's an adult now and she's looking at it a little bit more academically, she still has sort of those gut feelings, too, whenever the word comes up.
Yeah. Richard, thank you.
Thank you for talking to me. It gives me a lot of good memories.
Oh, I'm glad.
Well, you'll be sure to get a copy of the book. That's for sure. You'll enjoy it.
I get a chance to go to Vesterheim.
All right. Well, I'm sure at Vesterheim there are probably copies of the book right there.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, there were some other, some of the Christmas lore is kind of dark and threatening a little bit with Thor and the Christmas goat.
Right. One of the things that's interesting when you start to dig into these things is customs that today are very cozy and make us happy. If we think back centuries ago in rural Norway or other countries, for peasants, uneducated people in pre-Christian times who were very isolated, Christmas was the coldest, darkest, longest days of the year in that time period. And so there was a lot of folklore that developed at that time, and some people believe that the Eulabooking does go back to the legends of Thor, who used to ride through the skies with his goats. He brought one back to life after needing to kill one for a feast once. And also at the time, there were other spirits that sort of roam the sky, people who are described as trapped between heaven and hell. And on these dark nights, peasants really huddled together inside their homes. They were afraid to go outside. They didn't want to be snatched up by one of these
sort of
spirits, wandering
spirits. Return of the dead type thing. So.
Right. So some of the traditions, such as Eulabooking, probably had their origins in attempts that people were making to ward away evil.
And then on the other hand, you had Nisser.
Yes. Nisser are much more mischievous. A farmer might have a Nisser, a little elf type creature living in the barn. And as long as the farm family took care of their own particular little sprite, perhaps leaving out bowls of porridge or milk for him to drink, everything would be well, and he would help protect the property. If you forgot about him and neglected him, then he might be more of a prankster and a trickster.
Kathleen Ernst, our guest today, author of many books, her latest in the Chloe Ellefson Mystery Series, fourth book, called Heritage of Darkness. Great to have her along. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Having a lot of fun today talking with Kathleen Ernst, author, educator, social historian. She has a new book out called Heritage of Darkness. It's a wonderful book set at the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah, Iowa, just before Christmas. Of course, there's a murder involved and there's a whole mystery around it. But she weaves in so much of the wonderful history of Norwegian American history and of the museum itself, that it makes for fascinating reading. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Melissa in Menominee Falls up next. Hi, Melissa. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's so funny that you're talking about this today, because I was just talking to my mother yesterday. We are Greek and German and Norwegian, and we have so many traditions with being Greek and being German, but we were like, oh, we don't really have anything to do with being Norwegian that we think about. And just because, I'll be honest, we just thought about it yesterday, so I could probably do some of the research on my own. But I was wondering if you're aware of any places closer to the Milwaukee. I probably won't be able to make it to Iowa. Closer to the Milwaukee area that I could look into some of this.
Oh, what a great question. I think you'll have a lot of fun. There are a number of things you can do without leaving the state. The Milwaukee Public Museum has a wonderful exhibit that includes a recreated Norwegian house that you can visit. That's a nice place to start. There are groups called Sons of Norway Lodges, and if you do a search on the internet, you'll probably find some. I know there's one in the Madison area, which is a great way to get involved with other Norwegians and learn about culture. Old World Wisconsin has a couple of Norwegian buildings. If you haven't been there, I'm sure you'd enjoy a visit. And there's also places a little bit farther away, Norskedalen in western Wisconsin. And I'm not sure what the status is of Little Norway right now, but I think you'll have a great time exploring.
Yeah, I think it's Little Norway has gone by the boards.
Okay, but I knew it was closed for the season, was how it was posted.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, and you should probably give this book a read, too.
Sure. What is the name of the book again?
It's Heritage of Darkness, Heritage of Darkness, and Kathleen Ernst, the author.
Awesome, and I'm so excited for that Thor movie to come out. I know it's not really the original, but it's kind of fun, right?
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Darren in Madison, we turn to you next. Hi, Darren. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. I appreciate you being on. Thank you very much. And I'm from Wisconsin, Norwegian heritage. And we actually took a family trip to Norway when I graduated college.
Oh, how wonderful.
And it was amazing. It was awesome. It was great to see, you know, the heritage part of it. And one of the things I really love is a lot of the architecture and old-style building in some of the higher mountain areas of Norway, and that I've seen mimicked in some of the Alps and Switzerland. And I was just wondering if anybody ever does any kind of workshops or anything like that as far as, traditional old-style architecture of Norwegian stuff. And correct me if I'm confusing, some of the, more Swedish style or Switzerland style grass roofs with some of the rock and mud wood walls structure, and I'm just curious if that's also a Norwegian thing, and then if you know of anybody who does kind of workshops on teaching that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm not an expert on Norwegian architecture, but two places that I would suggest that you contact would be Old World, Wisconsin, near Eagle, Wisconsin,
yep.
And then also Vesterheim. Vesterheim does a lot of classes and workshops, including some heavy woodworking, not just small decorative pieces. And during Nordic Fest, which takes place every summer, they bring in all kinds of experts to demonstrate things. So I don't know what they have on tap, but that would be a good place to start. Mm.
Okay, and is that style of architecture, the kind you see in the mountains in Switzerland and in Sweden, am I mistaken that I remember seeing that same stuff in Norway, with the grass roofs and kind of the rock sod type sidewalls?
I think you're probably thinking of something very similar. As I said, I'm not an expert, but high in the mountains, they were places where women would take their animals up in the summer, and so they were kind of rustic buildings.
Mm. And I'll add in that one of the more interesting features of some of that we saw when we were out there, a lot of people perched their homes up kind of high on ridges, and only way access was with a ladder you could drop down,
wow.
And they did that so that they could keep the tax man from coming up.
Oh, how
and
interesting.
There were some families who would go a couple generations not letting the tax man come up the ladder to their property.
Good story,
Darren.
That's
a great story.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call or shoot us an email at talk@wpr.org. or post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Arnie in Douglas County, your turn. Thanks for calling.
Yes, I'm actually from Madison, but I happen to be up in Douglas County now. I had the great privilege for many years to know the longtime director and his wife at Vesterheim named Marion Nelson. And the story is this, that when I came out of the North Woods of Minnesota to start at the University of Minnesota, I took a class from Marion Nelson on Scandinavian architecture. And even though I was of Finnish background that, rather than Norwegian, he immediately took me under his wing, and I became somewhat of his protege as an undergraduate. And when I wrote my undergraduate thesis, his wife, then Lila, helped me with it, too. So the two were very dear friends.
Oh, what a special experience.
And I would go and visit them, Marion and Lila Nelson.
Yeah.
And I would go to visit them then in Decorah, too, as well, when they were competing back and forth between the Twin Cities and Decorah. And so I think my academic career, which I then eventually pursued, really was planted by those two.
Mm.
And I just wondered, did you use any information that the Nelsons might have left behind? Because he was really one of the foremost folk artist scholars of Norwegian lore in the United States.
Well, I absolutely did. I envy your opportunity to study with them. I never had the opportunity to meet them, but I don't think anyone could dig very deeply into Decorah history and Vesterheim in particular without coming across just the treasure trove of information that they gathered and knew, but also left behind for people like me.
And I might say that Lila is still living in the Twin Cities, so when I write to her next, I will say that I talked to you on the phone and that your name is still predominant.
Oh, please do. Thank you.
Yeah.
You bet.
Thanks.
Greetings from northern Wisconsin.
Thanks, Arnie. Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. And here we have also an email. By the way, you can email us at talk@wpr.org. We mentioned Little Norway a minute or two ago, and here we've got an email from the owners.
Oh, wonderful.
Little Norway closed for the 2013 season. For the past 75 years, Little Norway has been owned and operated by the Dahl family and its descendants, maintaining and improving this historic site. It's been a labor of love. Five generations have proudly shared with visitors this a privately owned collection of Norwegian heritage artifacts, probably the largest found outside of Norway. These 75 years have been both an honor and a challenge, presenting this museum and its beautiful setting. And it is a beautiful.
It's a treasure.
Beautiful
yeah.
setting. Little Norway is spending the 2013 season closed to the public as we work with foundations, scholars, and advisors to reorganize its ownership and future. So our goal is to keep this collection intact and improve its care, its accessibility, and its interpretive abilities. We look to 2014 with enthusiasm, with a unique opportunity in coming years to expand our work in historic preservation and destination tourism in southwestern Wisconsin.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much for the update. I took a lot of heart when I saw the sign that says closed for the season and really hope that that was indeed the case. Little Norway is an absolute treasure and one of the first places I visited when I moved to Wisconsin way back in the 1980s.
Ah, wonderful. Thank you again for that email. And again, you can join us with your own questions. Have you visited Vesterheim Museum? Loved it. What stuck with you? Or are you a Norwegian-American? What kinds of Norwegian or Christmas traditions have been handed down in your family? Love to hear about that as we visit with our guest for today, Kathleen Ernst. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions and comments. There are also other Norwegian arts and crafts that you talk about in the story, which are fun. And let's mention some of those. Is it
The budstikka, I believe, is the proper pronunciation. It was great fun to weave a lot of different crafts and artifacts into this story, and found wonderful things for a mystery writer to use. This was a way, it was a carved wooden tube with a point at the end, and hundreds of years ago, this was a way for official proclamations to be passed from farm to farm. A message would be inserted into the tube, and it might be driven into the farmer's door if the messenger arrived and the farmer wasn't there. So, of course, as a mystery writer, I was able to put that to a little bit more sinister use in the story.
Which was really cool, by the way. I loved it. And you had mangles.
Yes. Mangles are a wonderful tradition. It's a form of handheld ironing board, actually, but they have evolved as very decorative pieces. And traditionally, if a man was interested in courting a woman or asking her for her hand, he would carve a mangle just for her and leave it on her doorstep, which I always translate in my mind as, hello, I love you. Will you come do my laundry for the rest of my life? But I've seen just some stunningly beautiful mangles, both carved and painted at Vesterheim and Little Norway and other institutions.
And we have calendar sticks.
Oh, calendar sticks, another fun type of artifact. Again, before people in the rural mountains were educated and literate, this was something that they used. It's a long, narrow stick, and it helped them keep track of the time. There would be little notches for every day. And when Christianity arrived, some of the religious leaders also used them to help remind people when saints' days should be observed.
And, of course, food figures into your story as well. And, you know, some of the Norwegian Christmas delicacies,
yes,
like lefse.
Lefse is a wonderful soft flat bread that's made with potatoes in the dough, and it's a real treat. People would make it, roll it up with brown sugar and cinnamon, and enjoy it. It's a wonderful treat. And there's many different kinds of Norwegian Christmas cookies, too. Many are very time-consuming, so they were only brought out at Christmas time.
I don't think you mentioned lutefisk, though.
I did not bring lutefisk into the store. I'll have to save that for another one. Chloe is a good Stoughton girl. She was born and raised in Stoughton also, so I'm sure lutefisk will show up sooner or later.
Deborah and Merrill, thanks for calling.
Hi. I was born in Menominee, Wisconsin, and that was a large Norwegian farming community. My great-grandma was an immigrant from Norway, and every Christmas, my grandfather had a little country store called Midway Grocery Store, and he would always have a big barrel of lutefisk slabs.
Oh, my.
Frozen, and we would get together as a family and have lutefisk, lefse, Fatima, krumkaga, celebrate Christmas. And my grandfather would always tell the story that the lutefisk was particularly flavorful this year because enough dogs
inside
the barrel. And we would all squeal as grandchildren, but I have fond memories of that.
Oh.
What a wonderful family story.
And you mentioned krumkaka, which...
Krumkaka, yes.
Do you still make krumkaka, Deborah?
I do, and I make rosettes. And my husband is of Austrian descent, American. But when I first married him and I would make all the Christmas Norwegian Christmas delicacies, he'd always say, Norwegians, it's all white or variations of white. There was no color in the food. I had never noticed that before. But,
yeah,
I do.
Well, it's delicious. It brought back a memory from our family is not Norwegian, but our near neighbors, and one of my best friend at the time was his mother and grandmother made groom. Mm. And they were so good and at Christmas mm-hmm. time. It was wonderful.
It's a treat.
Thanks, Deborah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Bill in Burlington, thank you for calling. Hi.
It's my pleasure. What a great show. It brings back so many memories of great food during the Christmas season. We'd always have lefse that my mom taught me how to make, that her mom taught her how to make, and so on and so forth.
Oh, how wonderful.
We'd have rosettes and krumkraut, which was like a very sweet porridge, very thick porridge that we would eat, and always loved that. And I just really enjoy everything Norwegian now. When I was a kid growing up, it was I always kind of rolled my eyes at lutefisk, but now I can't wait to have it around Christmas time. So,
isn't that funny how that works? Yes.
And I want to also second and or third the interest in Little Norway, which I think is such a neat, neat place. And I was so saddened to hear just now that it had closed. But hopefully we'll see it again in the next season. I really want to take my kids there.
It's a wonderful place.
Thank you,
thank
Bill.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Tina, in New London, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I was calling because I actually grew up going to the Vesterheim Museum. I lived in Mabel, Minnesota, which was just north of Decorah. And I come from a large Norwegian-based family. And I remember my grandmother's slaving for days over lutefisk and lefse at Christmas time. And we actually have a pot that my mother cooks the rosettes in that's been handed down. It's on its third generation now.
Oh,
very special.
Wow, that's cool. And do you like lutefisk?
I do. I actually like it. And I've, strangely enough, been craving it for a couple of years.
I think it's all in how it gets prepared.
It is. It is. It's really good if you use fresh butter and cook it nice and slow. And we always had that with sweet soup and rummagrout for Christmas.
Oh, rummagrout. Someone else mentioned, we got a Facebook comment from Renee, who always celebrated Christmas with lutefisk and rummagrout dinner.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tina.
Thank you.
And Renee also said that she was an alum of Luther College. So, and she's looking forward to reading your book.
Ah, good.
Oh, and Tina, thanks again for calling. And Merlin in Taylor, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yeah, I called after you started talking about all this food and everything, and I was going to bring that out. But anyway, I've been to Norway a couple of times. I'm Norwegian descent, and what really amazed me over there was the Stavkirke. State churches. You know, they were really made me. I was awesome how they were built. But anyway, getting back to food a little bit, you talked about goat. You know, the poor people when they came to this country, it wasn't rummagrout, it was bosgrout. Goat made with water, flour and water.
Oh,
yeah. I mean that was for the people didn't have a cow,
sure,
you know, or anything, or any milk supply. And I can remember goat in my home. That was when Ma was getting low on groceries. We had goat.
Oh my! Yes, that makes perfect sense.
That was a signal that we probably better go and get some groceries.
Things were a little tight. Yes.
Oh, great story, Merlin.
And another one that was kind of comical, I think about it. When I was a kid, my dad would butcher. We had our own hogs, and I would catch the blood, and we would make brewkrupp or blood. It was kind of like Mom would put it in a cheesecloth or something, and then we'd cut it off and fry it and put butter on it. But a lot of people didn't think too much of that blood sausage.
Yeah, it's. Not something that I ever developed a taste for either, to be perfectly honest. But that's great stories,
thanks
Merlin.
Thanks for sharing your stories.
Thank you. Ralph in Little Suamico, turn to you. Hi, Ralph.
Hi. Thanks for getting me on. I know I'm close to changing topics, but I just had a question. My grandpa was from Stavanger, and when I'd go visit him and my grandma when I was a kid, and it was always on Thursday because the food was always the same each day of the week. But every Thursday they had what was called fiskabuller. And it was like a mashed potatoes, and then it was kind of a cream sauce with cod. It was like, I think the buller meant balls of cod, which was probably a little more mild than lutefisk. But I was just wondering if anybody knew where you can get that now, or if anybody's familiar with that besides me.
Well, I'm not sure where you could get it. If you're interested in more information or reviving making it, I would again recommend either Vesterheim or Old World Wisconsin. Both of those institutions regularly offer workshops in traditional food ways, and I'm sure some of the experts there could help you.
It probably would know. I would bet.
Yeah.
If you could get your, if there was a place that you could buy it, they would probably know.
Nowhere.
One place or the other.
You used to be able to buy it in tins. It was like in a can.
Yeah, I have not seen.
Apparently nobody else liked it because it anymore.
There you go, Ralph. Thank you.
Thank you.
And someone may, you know, check my Facebook page out, because it's possible somebody will know where you can purchase it and post it.
Yeah, there might be someone still importing it, a specialty shop.
Yeah, there could well be. Well, this was the book itself is such a great mystery. And, of course, there's this relationship between Chloe and her mother, which I sometimes get mad at Chloe, to be perfectly honest, because I think she's way too hard on her mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, mothers and daughters, that's a challenging relationship. And the impetus for the whole story is Chloe does want to improve her relationship with her mother. It's not bad, but it's not close. And she wants to do a little better. So she suggests this trip. And I think it goes both ways.
Yeah.
There's some long-standing traditions there. And Chloe's mother can be hard on her, and Chloe can be hard on mom. And Relke goes along on the trip thinking that he can help smooth the way. And pretty early in the book, he realizes that he was a bit naive about how much he could accomplish there. But they all have good hearts. They're all working in the right direction.
Oh, yeah. They all have great hearts. And again, tonight you are reading, you're at Mystery to Me?
Mystery to Me, our wonderful new independent bookstore on Monroe Street in Madison. I'll be there at 6 o'clock p.m. and the fun will last till about 7:30.
And do you have some others coming up down the road, a few?
Yes. You can always keep track of where I'm going to be by checking the calendar on my website, which is KathleenErnst.com. But I do have several fun events coming up in Decorah over the next few weeks. I'm actually going to be team teaching a class at the end of the month with the food expert at Vesterheim, and we're going to be doing some writing and some baking and talk about how we find and preserve our food traditions at the holidays. And then I'm also giving a Chloe Ellison behind-the-scenes tour with one of the curators at Vesterheim in early December.
Oh, that'll be fun.
That will be great fun.
So you'll go to the places that you talk about in the book.
Yes. So you can hear from both someone who is an expert on Vesterheim and the collections and from me about the story, and we'll be visiting all the places highlighted in Heritage of Darkness.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It'll be great fun, I promise. Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us today. It was such a treat.
It was my great pleasure. It's always fun to come.
And you know, the cool thing about your books is I don't want to give the plots away, and you have so much in your books that we can talk about, history and culture and so forth, that we never have to give away.
Don't worry about spoilers.
So we don't have to give away spoilers. Mm-hmm. So that's wonderful. Kathleen, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Kathleen Ernst, author, educator, social historian, and she's author of, among other things, the Chloe Ellison Mystery Series, set right here in Wisconsin. This one happens to be set in Iowa at the Vesterheim Norwegian American Museum in Decorah, Iowa. But it's a great read. It's called Heritage of Darkness. So go to your local bookstore and pick up a copy, and you're going to enjoy reading it. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We have lots of things we can talk about. There's so many layers to a great book like Heritage of Darkness. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the many layers that exist with the Internet and how it can be both positive and it can also be negative for our young people. That's coming up next, so I hope you'll stay with us right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.